We are going to continue the hour with part three of our three-part series on rabies, the signs and symptoms, and most importantly, how to treat it and prevent it. Dr. Charles Ruprecht is our resident rabies expert. He has a veterinary degree from Penn, a PhD in biological sciences from Wisconsin, currently teaching at Auburn, and he has served in the past as chief of the rabies section of the National Center for Infectious Disease at the CDC in Atlanta and director of the World Health Organization's Collaborating Center for Rabies Reference and Research. Dr. Ruprecht, thank you so much for being with us today again.
Thank you, Aaron. Pleased to be with you.
And this conversation made possible by Grifols, a leading global healthcare company. So we've talked already about the general background or the general information that we need to know about rabies. And then we talked last segment about what constitutes an exposure to rabies and what you need to do if and when you do get exposed. What else should folks know about this disease that's going to keep not just them safe, but also and equally importantly, their pets safe if there's any risk of exposure?
Great question, Aaron. Prevention is really the key. And so education to our children about not contacting strange acting animals or animals that we are not familiar with, and particularly wildlife, that's really the key. Education, if you can touch it, don't, such as wild animals, because wild animals who are infected sometimes lose their fear of people and sometimes behave erratically, but sometimes because viruses can be excreted in their saliva, even from what appear to be completely normal animals, we don't want our children coming in contact with potentially rabid animals. Number two, all dogs and cats should be vaccinated against rabies. And so most people think, well, my dog is always on a leash. My cat is in the house and doesn't go out without supervision. Even when you're walking your dog, for example, in parks, rabid animals can attack even your dog on a leash. If your cat's in the house, sometimes rabid animals come into our houses. Bobcats, raccoons, skunks, and bats that roost in houses sometimes can then come in contact even with house-bound pets. That's one of the reasons why all dogs and cats should be vaccinated against rabies. In addition, animals such as horses that used to be thought of more broadly as livestock used for transportation, oftentimes are considered more as companion animals, and we don't think about vaccinated horses, not so much that we're concerned about them infecting us, although any infected mammal can infect people, but because we want to protect them, and because horses that are out in a paddock or grazing out on pasture, you're not able to watch all the time, and the same with calves. Domestic animals at risk, whether they be companion animals or larger outdoor animals like horses, all should be vaccinated against rabies. We have very effective, safe vaccine. We're concerned about vaccine hesitancy post-COVID pandemic, where some people think that they don't have to vaccinate their animals. They don't think rabies is important, but it is the predominant reason why routine veterinary care and responsible pet ownership is key. That's one of the most important things we can do in terms of education and preventive care for our pets and companion livestock, for example. In addition, we have to recognize that rabies in wildlife is very widespread, and impacts from, say, deforestation, environmental changes, may be putting people more at contact and more potentially at risk of animals, and hence the relative risk of rabies. And so we have to recognize that although this is one of the oldest diseases in nature, it's still very prevalent. It's just changed. We don't have rabies dog-to-dog-to-dog transmission in the United States. We have rabies in wildlife. We have an abundant conservation of our wildlife throughout the United States, and unfortunately, some of these populations of carnivores and bats can be infected with rabies and can infect us too.
What new treatment or research is on the horizon?
Thanks, Aaron. And I want to make an important distinction between prevention, or what we call prophylaxis, that is medical intervention to prevent the development of the disease, in this case rabies, from treatment. Treatment by and large means one gets the disease and we try to prevent it from occurring after you've been exposed to it. So treatment is, we don't wait for rabies to develop and then try to treat it. We want to prevent it before it shows clinical signs. Because rabies is so virulent, and if you show signs of illness of rabies, you're likely going to die. We're trying to prevent it using prophylaxis. Treatment is an intervention primarily for individuals who are showing signs of the disease. Since the development of new therapeutics and biologics, people have been wondering, well, can I treat rabies? There have been a handful of people around the world that have been treated successfully, but usually these are individuals who've been exposed to rabies, received some kind of prophylaxis, and then developed the disease anyway. So there are some individuals who have survived rabies, not so much that it was treated effectively as much as we had post-exposure prophylaxis failures, and then with medical intervention, were able to treat it. We also had the first historical survivor, Gina Gheese, in the Guinness Book of World Records, who as a teenager was exposed to a rabid bat and remarkably was never vaccinated, but was able to have intervention, intensive care, medical intervention for over a month, induction of coma. And she is one of the few people in the world who survived rabies without a history of vaccination. But these are exceedingly rare and considered medical marvels. Most people who are exposed to rabies viruses and don't receive appropriate prophylaxis, that is washing of the wounds, infiltration of immune globulins, and modern rabies vaccines, most of those individuals will go on to die. So when we're talking about treatment, it means trying to intervene in individuals who already have signs of the disease as opposed to prophylaxis, trying to prevent any of those signs from developing by intervening before that virus gets into the brain and starts to multiply. Some of the newer options that may be coming on the horizon might make it easier to receive prophylaxis. So if you think of a developing country where they may not have the resources for many doses of vaccine, trying to reduce the number of doses that people receive, trying to improve on how rabies immune globulins are infiltrated. There's also products that we call monoclonal antibodies that are being looked at as alternatives to rabies immune globulin. Because if you think of it, vaccinating people, taking their plasma, concentrating it, that's a very long and expensive process. Monoclonal antibodies are lifelong immune cells that are immortalized that can be grown in cell culture, and antibodies are purified from these rabies lifelong immune cells, and they only recognize rabies virus. So monoclonal antibodies have already been licensed in China and in India, even though they were developed first back in 1978. The Wistar Institute in Philadelphia, where I was able, very fortunate to spend about a decade on research and development, monoclonal antibodies are another thing that's up and coming on the horizon for prophylaxis or prevention of rabies. And of course, then there's the Holy Grail. As we learn more and more from applied research on how rabies viruses actually kill, what they do at a cellular and molecular level, some of those research insights may allow us to design therapeutics and actual true treatment. That is, when individuals don't recognize they've been exposed because they don't know about rabies, or they've been exposed and didn't recognize they've actually been bitten because they were asleep, for example. There may be on the horizon the development of antivirals. We don't have any licensed antiviral drugs for rabies yet, but as we learn these insights about how the virus kills and develop better tools, there may be the opportunity for when that phone rings and we have a case of rabies in a child that we may be able to intervene into the future with heroic medical care and some of these new tools that may be developed. And in addition, as we recognize that environments around the world are changing, for example, in the news about rabies in South African Cape seals, we don't oftentimes think about marine mammals like seals with rabies, but in a way, they're just big aquatic raccoons. Well, if they've been infected by rabies, such as, for example, dogs or jackals or any other source, and they're in big concentration, like into the millions around some of these coastlines, then even outbreaks in things like seals can occur, as opposed to routine raccoons and skunks and foxes and jackals, etc. All mammals are susceptible. And so we're finding out things change, stuff happens. Some of these tools are allowing us to find out about new patterns, what we call cross-species transmission, the ability of one reservoir mammal to have those viruses spill over into a different species of mammal. And then in some situations, those rabies viruses take advantage of that new animal, and we have a new outbreak occurring in species that we never thought of before. This is some of our concerns about diseases of nature, how they occur, how they can spill over, how they can cause outbreaks, how they can be prevented. We have development of biologics, wildlife vaccines for some of our animals. As we speak, from New England all the way down to Georgia and Alabama, vaccine-laden baits for wildlife are being distributed. So we not only have the ability to prevent rabies in humans after exposure, to prevent rabies in our domestic animals by vaccination, but also application to certain wildlife reservoirs to prevent this disease of nature.
Speaking with Dr. Charles Ruprecht, and we got to wrap up. If people want more information, where can they go?
There's a lot of great information available from your state and local health authorities. Almost all states have some great websites. In addition, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta also have a lot of key recommendations for human health providers, veterinarians, and of course, the U.S. Department of Agriculture Wildlife Services, if you're interested about rabies and wildlife and its prevention, and their national program, all have information, publications, websites, and there are a variety of experts, subject matter experts out there to answer your questions about rabies and its prevention.
Again, you can listen back to this full three-part series up on our website, chapelboro.com. That concludes part three. Dr. Charles Ruprecht, thank you so much for being with us.
Aaron, thanks very much for having me on. Have a great day.